Good morning, everybody, and welcome to A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. Be here until 11 o'clock this morning. We have an open line this first hour, then a conversation with the former University of Illinois president, Stan Eikenberry. We look forward to hour number two and a visit with Stan. I have not seen him for a long time. He, in my opinion, is the best president we've had. I haven't lived forever, but I've been around a long time, and we've seen a lot of presidents come and go, and some of them quite good. Bob Easter, for one. But Stan Eikenberry, back in the time that when he was the president and John Cribbett was the chancellor, that was a great time for many, many reasons. They had a lot of problems. They had a lot of stuff to go through. We'll do a little nostalgia about that. We'll also talk to Stan about higher education and what is happening with all the state funding. Where do we go from here? Talk to him a little bit about all the fundraising that he did when he was here and how that is maybe different than it is now. And also let you know that he and Lex Tate on Friday from 3 to 5 at the Granger Library in the U of I have a little presentation about the men and the buildings that built the University of Illinois. Anyway, that's the second hour. First hour, a lot of things to talk about. You can jump in at any time at 356-9397. The Castle Heating and Cooling text line is 351-5357. President Trump says it's about time after the NFL Commissioner Goodell calls on players to stand for the anthem. And the MGM Resorts disputes the Las Vegas police timeline of the shooting. It's going to be a little controversial out there now. I don't remember. I'll look at the story to see if it was a policeman or a security guard or who was shot. They thought after all the shooting had been done down on the crowd, but indeed, we find out that he was shot before that, and several minutes went by before anyone realized it, and they said, well, maybe something could have been done. Evidently, these people that the police and others have devices on them, maybe recorders or radios back to the central headquarters, that somebody should have known what happened to this guy, is what they're saying. President Obama and Hillary Clinton finally are appalled at the New Yorker run sexual assault allegations against Harvey Weinstein. And here locally, the nursing home sale proposal search, tentatively okayed by the Champaign County Board. It'll be 5 more years before construction is complete, is what they're estimating. But drafts of the high school schematics have been released of the proposed unit for schools. U of I is going to form a free speech task force with students and faculty included. And on that same topic, Jim Dye reports in today's Gazette editorial that on the campus, the fight for free speech is being lost and won. The vacant Brazee Tower in Danville has a new owner. Evidently, that took the city by surprise. They're not too happy about it either. That building needs a lot of work. And the Cubs and the Nationals were rained out yesterday. They will play at 3 o'clock today. Cubbies lead that one 2-1. They'd sure like to wrap it up at home. And the story of the Schofield athletes, including Washington's Jason Wirth. You know about that story? Dick Schofield is a good friend of mine. He lives in Springfield now. He's about 82 years old. And his son played, and his daughter was a great athlete. And Jason Wirth is her son. It's a long list of people all in one family and what they did. If we have time, we'll take a look at that this morning. And goodbye and good luck to a U of I legend, my good friend Jean Driscoll. She's heading to North Carolina to, as she said, experience the other way of doing things. She's worked primarily in development here and will work in development there. Jim Dye writes about the Rick Pitino story. Pitino, you know, is selling his house and moving out of town, while at the same time still complaining that he will be vindicated in the college basketball scandal. 9/11, 52 degrees, and boy, that was some rain last night. When I came to work this morning about 6:15, Devonshire, for about a half a block there, was underwater. The water was up over the wheels of your car, and people were driving, thankfully, very, very slow to get through it, but it was just off of Prospect. Just as soon as you turn from Prospect onto Devonshire, it was a lake, and probably gone down by now, I would think. But that was some rain we've had in the last couple of days. All right, let's take a break here. Who's going to be first today? Any of these stories that I talked about have any appeal to you? You want to pick up on those? Or maybe you've just been waiting for some open line so you can bring up something you've been thinking about for a while now. We haven't had many open lines. Tomorrow we'll have 2 hours of open line, and on Friday it'll be an Illini Friday on that second hour, because we have a home football game. But right now, phone lines open this first hour, so give me a shout. What's on your mind? What's going on with you? What are you thinking about? Or how is the rain in where you're living? We'll take a break. We're coming right back. And to the phones we go on Penny for Robbie. Hello, Robbie.
Yeah, good morning, Jim. Listen to your show all the time.
Thank you.
What's going on downtown with all the big cranes and stuff in front of the News Gazette building? They got the whole downtown area all blocked off.
Yeah, I know they have. Do you know the answer to that, Ed? Pull your mic down and just tell us. Ed Bond's been going back and forth between here and our new home, which is in the News Gazette building. We'll all be down there one of these days.
Yeah.
What is it, Ed?
They're removing presses out of that building.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why the crane is there, to lift them
out of
the roof.
48 Main?
Yes.
Oh, so the News Gazette doesn't have printing presses and champagne anymore?
The newspaper is currently printed in Peoria.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all right. Well, thank you very much. I was just curious. I went downtown and it was all blocked off.
Yeah, well, what the heck is going on, right?
Yeah, right.
Or something like that.
Yes.
Okay, Robbie, that's it. The radio station was once in that building. That's where the radio station started, in that very same building. And they said it was very difficult to do some radio programs because of the sound of the press. And we go now to Mike. Hello, Mike.
Hey, good morning, Jim. I was watching Channel 3 News Monday night and got a good laugh. Stan's Democrats were having a governor's debate, and they were telling the people, you know, everything they wanted to hear, and they were going to get them free education and $15 an hour wages, but they didn't have a clue how to pay for it, and forgot that they've got our state in such debt that, you know, but they're just going along telling the people what all they want to hear.
Well, that's not unusual, is it, Mike? That's what candidates for office do.
That's right. Tell you what you want to hear and do exactly what they want to do.
Or not do anything, you know, one of the two.
And another thing, Chris Kennedy, here he's going and making fun of Kentucky. He says, well, if they can have free education, we surely can too. And, you know, here, of any state in the union making fun of somebody, we're the worst of everything.
Well, it's amazing how many promises people make without any thought, or if they have a thought of how to pay for it, they never mention that. That's the other part of it.
Yep. We have so much debt that they won't get it paid in my lifetime.
Oh, and mine either.
Okay. Have a day.
Thank you, Mike. And Darren says, I believe that all the pressing issues in the U.S. and the world, Trump has exhausted too much energy on this Star-Spangled Ban subject. The root of the initial protest has been lost due to what he likes to refer to as fake news. This is not a protest against the flag, but a stand for equality for all. Too much time and money spent on this. Employ Kaepernick and this subject dissolves. Well, never thought of that. Kaepernick doesn't have a job. Wouldn't want to use the word blackballed, but nobody wants to hire him, and going to hang on here. It looks like it. Speaking of football, here is a statement that I'd be interested to have you tell me your opinion of. Did you realize that the United States has been free of oppression for at least a century? So what are we all worried about? Hadn't been any oppression in this country for 100 years. Mike Ditka told Jim Gray that on Westwood One's pregame show ahead of the Bears' loss to the Vikings. He said, all of a sudden it's become a big deal. There has been no oppression in the last 100 years that I know of. Maybe I'm not watching it as carefully as other people. The discrimination and bigotry that Ditka's Bears teammates faced in the mid-1960s was depicted in the 1971 movie Brian's Song, starring James Caan as Brian Piccolo and Billy Dee Williams as Gale Sayers, the team's first interracial roommates. The Civil Rights Act wasn't passed until 1964, and the Voting Rights Act came the next year. The last 100 years in the United States have included efforts to eradicate decades of Jim Crow laws that enforced racial segregation and their legacy, discriminatory practices in housing, hiring, education, transportation, the armed forces, public accommodations, and even pro sports have been fought. Civil disobedience was a catalyst for some of the progress that has been made, but Ditka repeated his criticism of NFL players demonstrating during the national anthem before the games. He says, is that the stage for this? If you want to protest, you've got a right to do that, but I think you're a professional athlete. You have an obligation to the game. I think you have to respect the game. That's what I think is the most important thing. I don't see a lot of respect. I just see respect for their own individual opinions. Opinions are like noses. We all have one. Some are good, some are bad. So it's a problem with the noses. How did we not notice that? Ditka insisted he wasn't condemning anyone for criticizing anybody, but urged players to protest when the game is over. Protest whatever other way you want to. He said he would bench players who insisted on demonstrating during the anthem. If you don't respect our country, then you shouldn't be in this country playing football. Go to another country and play football. If you had to go somewhere else to try to play the sport, you wouldn't have a job. If you can't respect the flag and the country, then you don't respect what this is all about. So I would say adios. Gray cited athletes such as Muhammad Ali and Jesse Owens who have taken on social injustices, but Ditka was unmoved. He said, I don't know what social injustices there have been. Muhammad Ali rose to the top. Jesse Owens is one of the classiest individuals that ever lived. Are you saying everything is based on color? I don't see it that way. You have to be colorblind in this country. You've got to look at a person for what he is and what he stands for and how he produces, not by the color of his skin. That has never had anything to do with it. No oppression for at least a century, says Mike Ditka. 924, 52 degrees, a break here. We're coming right back on this open line. It is 9:29. We break for the news here in just a moment. But in the meantime, Bobby has joined us. Bobby, what's going on?
Hey there, Jim. I got two comments. One real quick.
Go ahead.
Donald Trump economy is running off of the goodness of Barack Obama and the Democrats' economy, because Donald Trump has not done anything. He has not accomplished anything to consider the credibility of Barack Obama and the Democrats' economy or the Wall Street. But anyway, what I want to talk about is that it got to do with the flag and Black America and the football players taking a knee, standing protest. One thing I want to say is it has nothing to do with the flag, period. I can't understand why people can seem to have a hard time to understand that Black people have not got the equality when it comes down to the justice system.
Well, Bobby, why then are they doing it, doing their protesting during the national anthem when it has nothing to do with the flag?
Well, let me tell you this. The flag is supposed to be, the pledge of allegiance to the flag stated that equal justice for all people. But we are not, for Black people, we have not getting equality in the justice system. We got police over there murdering Black citizens.
Well, Bobby, you'd make a good politician, because when I ask you a question, you go to some other answer.
No, I didn't.
My point is, and I think this is one of the points that a lot of people, including the head of the National Football League, is making, that it's all right to protest, and we know there are things that need to be protested about, but why do you have to do it while the national anthem is being played?
Well, I'm glad they're doing it, because I remember I called in, I told you a long time ago, we need a discussion on race relations in this country.
Okay, well, you didn't answer it again.
Okay, let me answer this way then. Why put the flag in front of Black people while they play football, and expected to honor the flag when the flag is not honoring Black people and the players? Can you answer that question?
Yeah, listen to this. This is what Trump had to tweet about the stock market. The stock market has increased by $5.2 trillion since the election on November the 8th, 25% increase, the lowest unemployment in 16 years, and if Congress gives us the tax cuts and reform I'm asking for, those numbers will grow by leaps and bounds. That was the first part of your first thing you said, that everything was going to wherever it was going, not doing so well. He thinks it's doing pretty good.
Yeah, but he's running. But right now, the economy is off of Barack Obama and the Democrats, not Donald Trump and the Republicans, because they have not changed a thing. Everything is still the same after Obama left office.
Okay, appreciate the call, Bobby. Got a break for the news here at 9:32. Brian Barnhart has the news headlines. We'll be back with more Open Line on Penny after the news, and then after 10 o'clock, a visit with former president of the University of Illinois, Stan Eikenberry. Here's Brian. This is Penny for Your Thoughts. This is an Open Line. 9:37 is the time, 52 degrees. Out in Las Vegas, one of the major changes in the revised timeline is when the hotel security guard, Jesus Campos, was shot. Police learned that he was shot before the attack, not after, as was previously stated. Paddock, the shooter, also checked into the hotel 3 days earlier than first reported. Judge Andrew Napolitano, Fox News' senior judicial analyst, said that the news from the new timeline is not that the security guard was shot earlier than previously stated, but the news was that the agent of the hotel, who should have been carrying with him a recording device, a device that would have allowed the head of security or somebody in security to listen in, was shot at 200 times by an automatic weapon. He continued, "So Mandalay Bay knew of the existence and the presence and the workability of the automatic weapon 6 minutes before he started killing people. That should have triggered an enormous response," he said, considering the argument that lawyers could make it to a jury if it gets to that point. The Las Vegas Review-Journal reported that the MGM statement was released from a public relations firm in New York. And we go to Sam. Hello, Sam.
Good morning, Jim.
What's up, Sam?
Well, I had a little... I wanted to comment on that. I think they're called political cartoons. There's been in the paper lately by a Lincoln Corkery. Those are great. There was one about the MTD director yelling out the window about his raise, and then the other day there was one about two buses for $3 million or whatever it was.
Yep, I saw those.
Yeah, they're great, but we need to look further. In the paper, in the article, he referenced Canton, Ohio, about how they're on the cutting edge of this new technology. They do. They have three buses. And they have a 400,000 and some change population base over there. That's how many riders they have a year.
They have a total of three buses?
No, they have three of the hydrogen buses.
Oh, three of the hydrogen. Okay, go ahead.
They have 100 buses also.
All right.
But we have about 150,000 population base, or maybe a little more, not much more. But they have a 400,000 population base. I talked to a guy there the other day at the district. What do you think their ridership is? They've got over three times the population base to pick riders from.
Well, I don't know, but I take it from what you're about to tell me that it's a lot less than ours.
2.5 million. He said, now, I think 1 year we hit 2.6, but last year was 2.5. So here we go again. Mathematically, let's try to figure out how this is even possible to get 12 million riders here in Champaign-Urbana. Now, those buses were expensive, but the expensive part is the refueling station. That can run into several thousand dollars a week. So I think it's just a great idea, you know. What an outfit! You know, with those with that
and,
writership.
And did you say it was Dayton that you were talking about?
No, Canton, Ohio.
Okay, Canton. Well, Canton doesn't have a university, right?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I don't know, but they've got 400,000 and some change people to pick from. They've got a lot more potential writers than we do.
Well, the number of writers that we have that are university students shoots that number up pretty high.
I don't know.
Well, you do know. I mean,
but but it's not possible because all the buses are empty. I mean, it's not possible. You can see eight buses in a row.
The buses aren't empty on the campus. That's where a lot of those numbers come from. That's my opinion.
They don't come from legitimate on-off. If they had a fare box where people put money in, and then at the end of the day, they said we had so many writers.
That's right. It could be the same person writing four or five times a day.
Well, no, that's their plan, and that's how they do it. They say that. Somehow, some way, they get away with that, and that's the way they can base their writership on, because the students pay a fee, so they can therefore say, well, every student pays a fee, so therefore they must ride the bus five times. It's some kind of hocus-pocus, but it's not true. In reality, it's not true. They don't have that many writers.
Okay. Thank you, Sam. Appreciate your call. Sam has called about that several times, and I don't know what to tell him because he gives factual numbers, and I think that's quite true on what happens with those numbers. They go up a lot based on people riding the bus from one place to another on the campus and getting on and off several times. Jerry is next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Jim. In light of this new information about the Las Vegas massacre, I heard that yesterday also, that the security guard, you know, went up there and was shot. And then it was 6 minutes later that the gunman decided to start shooting. And then it was about like an hour and 3 minutes or an hour and 10 minutes until the SWAT team arrived. You know, during that time, that guy was just massacring all these people while the police were waiting for a SWAT team. And this isn't the first time it's happened. You know, there's been other things like this, like at the movie theater and that, and they've waited for these SWAT teams to come while these people were getting murdered. Why didn't some of the police go up there? And, you know, their job is to stop them, not to stand there and wait, you know, for the SWAT team to come. When they finally breached the room, he was dead. It was all over. You know, I just think that there were a lot of innocent people killed when the police should have been up there doing something instead of just waiting and preparing for the SWAT team. What do you think?
Well, I know that same story that you've just told has been reported here recently, and it would seem logical that somebody other than the SWAT team and this one security guard would have been. In fact, he wasn't even going up there to look for this person. He was just checking rooms, is my understanding.
Right, yeah, he had an alarm. But I don't understand that. You know, they get all these big high-powered vehicles and that for their SWAT team. And the police nowadays, they wait for the SWAT team instead of going in and trying to do something. I got a feeling there had to be a better way than just sitting there and waiting for all these police officers and the SWAT team. I think it's a shame. I just, you know, it's just too bad because I think, you know, it's going to intensify. You know, they're going to find other ways to kill masses of people. And if it's going to be the same way, then, you know, it needs to be stopped. They need to go in and do something.
Well, for one thing, they don't know what they're getting into. I'm not trying to defend them because I basically agree with what you just said, that there should be some other people that if they knew exactly where the shooting was coming from, they would have done something about it. But When you go up there, you don't know if you got one shooter. You don't know what you got. You don't know if it's multiple rooms. You don't know if this is a terrorist attack. You don't know what it is until you get there and find out. And by the time you get there, all the damage has been done, of course. We go to Bob. Hello, Bob.
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I have an interesting thing about all kinds of sports. I don't know if the news people will find out. Is there any other sport besides golf you have to get a low score on golf to win, when all your other sports you have to get a high score? And I'm interested not only in the United States, but other countries that play sports. Is there any other sport out there besides golf that you have to have a low score to win? So I just want to bring that up. I just have to think about it.
Okay. Thanks for the call. 37 years ago today, 1980, quarterback Dave Wilson led the Illini football team to a 20-14 win at Iowa. It's interesting, from time to time, the names of Tony Eason and Dave Wilson and Jack Trudeau come up, and it's very, very interesting how they happened to get here. It's my understanding that Mike White accepted a couple of them, I believe Eason and Wilson, without ever having seen them play. Of course, Mike was from California. He coached out there. He had a lot of contacts. He knew the junior college coaches. And they said, hey, these guys can play. And he took their word for it. And could they? Wow. We'll take a break. 9:48, 53 degrees at the radio center. We have an open line going until 10 o'clock this morning, then the news from CBS, and a conversation with former president of the University of Illinois, Stanley Eikenberry. We're at 356-9397. You can text us at 351-5357. If you have something on your mind you want to get on, that's the way you do it. You know, Busey is honored to be recognized by the Association for Talent Development with the 2017 Best Award, all capitals, B-E-S-T, a true testament to the organization's unique culture. The Best Award is among the most distinguished and coveted recognitions for workplace training and development. Busey is recognized for its enterprise-wide success in employee talent development, providing associates more than 100 learning and development opportunities in-house, in addition to education assistance, certification, designation support. Busey is ranked 27th out of 40 organizations worldwide representing all industries to receive this award. In addition to learning and development opportunities, Busey is pleased to invest in its most valuable asset, its associates, through countless recognition opportunities, the Associate Appreciation Month and Busey's annual Associates Meeting, Random Act of Kindness Week, celebrating service excellence and career achievements, and many, many more, and health and wellness. A Be Well is a robust suite of tools and resources to help associates make positive lifestyle changes, focusing on physical, mental, and emotional well-being. Busey thanks its talented and dedicated associates for making this acknowledgement possible and promise the customers and the community members that this will continue. This is a great place to work. They win the Best Award, and from what I've just told you, there are no reason why. There is a lot of reasons why, right? My goodness. Ted is in Savoy. Hello, Ted.
Good morning. I, like the other caller, feel this. I'm not sure whether he's the undersheriff or sheriff. I'm hearing different names when they introduce him. He's in over his head. You could tell by the way he was with the reporters earlier.
You're talking about Las Vegas? You're talking about Las Vegas now?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
he mentioned after Sandy Hook, and all police departments have a new saying that's basically gang rush the shooter. Don't worry about the semantics. Gang rush the shooter. And yes, he had an automatic weapon, but throwing an RPG, throwing a stick of dynamite, there's going to be collateral damage in the hotel, but you have to split decision. Collateral damage in the hotel of the guests or hundreds upon hundreds of people sitting ducks outside, but an hour to get in the room, come on, man. that was ridiculous. And all the time changes and just the way he's talking to the press, this guy's in over his head. And if you're gonna do, after you said, like Sandy Hook, start gang rushing, I think they call it an active shooter. Gang rushing isn't waiting an hour. It's gang rushing. And that's the path you chose, you know, go up against an automatic weapon. I'm not a cop. If that's the path you chose, that's the path you chose.
Yep, exactly right. Thank you. Let's go to Rick in Champaign. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Jim. I don't have anything to add to the Las Vegas massacre story, other than several years ago I was walking around our neighborhood in Las Vegas, and there was a gentleman out in his driveway washing his car. He was a couple blocks away from our house. And started talking to him and found out that he was the head of the Las Vegas SWAT team. Now, this was several years ago, so it's probably not the same man in charge right now. But it was very interesting hearing his stories. And so he told me one story that had been on the national news, but it's probably too long to tell you about now, because I know you're nearing the end of the hour. But it was very interesting hearing the many stories he had to tell.
Did he tell you how they operate, what the protocol is for? Did they rush the shooter back in those days, or did you get to that far?
Not really. This was a few months after Nashville sort of story where two policemen had been shot and killed eating lunch there in Vegas. Oh. It was a husband-wife couple who shot, and they fled to a Walmart half a block away, and this guy, as head of the SWAT team, was the first one in the Walmart. It was interesting because you heard version on the news, the local news, the national news, and then you heard his version where they had to chase these people down hiding in the Walmart. And it was just very interesting talking to him. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of interesting stories to tell.
Yeah, I bet. Appreciate the call, Ricka. Thank you. We're at 356-9397. You can text us at 351-5357. Champaign County board members last night gave tentative approval to releasing a request for proposals for the sale of the county nursing home. But it's possible the 10-7 vote could be reversed next week, when the board, including four Democrats missing from Tuesday night's committee meeting, meets at its regular October meeting. Voting to release the request for proposals, which could lead to the sale of the nursing home to a private operator as early as January, were all nine Republicans that were present and a Democrat, Patsy Petrie. The other several Democrats present voted against the release. We had somebody write in about that a little while ago, and I'll see if I can find it. Here it is. The text from George says, the Champaign County Board clearly wants to sell the nursing home and continue to run it by dictating terms. No developer can effectively run the home with their hands tied like this. AFSCME must go, and the developer's proposals will determine the value and the best way to run their business. Get ready for the board to dig in and find a way to continue this fiasco. So we'll see. This is the move that they made last night was one that was expected. Nothing to surprise you about that. They promised to get the request for proposals a long time ago. And Tim Mitchell writes in the Gazette this morning that it will be another 5 years before construction is complete, but architects on Tuesday night unveiled the first glimpse of what the Champaign's new and improved high schools would look like. Representatives from Chicagoland's Perkins and Will and Urbana's IGW Architecture presented the school board with schematics all marked draft in big letters. For the two priciest projects of the six-school, $183.4 million referendum passed by voters last November. Chris Kloppel, the school board president, said this is the first public document to come forward since our visioning of what the schools will be like. So it'll be a long time, but it'll be nice when it gets here. This story says 5 years before construction is complete. Sometimes construction is even delayed, too. Have you noticed that? Our time is up this first hour. Former U of I President Stan Eikenberry next here on WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. Welcome back to hour number two of A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin, and as promised, my guest here in the studio is Stan Eikenberry. Stanley Eikenberry is the president of the University of Illinois from 1979 to 1995, and then came back in 2009 to assist the University of Illinois in rebuilding confidence in the university following that reputational controversy involving admission practices. And I have not seen Stanley Eikenberry for a while now, maybe a year or so. It's so good to have him here. I hope a lot of people, friends of his, will be able to see him and to shake hands while he is here. I know, Stan, you've got a lot of, this was your home for a real long time. I would imagine that you've still got a lot of people here you'd like to see.
Well, it still is our spiritual home, I guess, Jim. It's a lovely place, and it's great to be back, and great to see you again.
You live now where?
Well, we're nomads. Judy and I live both in Florida for the winter months, and we've moved to State College, Pennsylvania, to be near our youngest son, John, and his wife, and three grandchildren that provide a attractive venue there for us during the summer months.
Back near, back at Penn State.
It's interesting. We left there in 1979 to come to Illinois, and we returned thinking that perhaps we would find a lot of old friends back there. We still do have a few friends back there, but unfortunately, the years have taken its toll. So the grandchildren are the primary draw.
You were very active in getting Penn State into the Big Ten Conference. I remember those years.
Well, that's an interesting story, too. The Sports Illustrated just called me a week or so ago, and they're doing a special issue on the 25th anniversary, I guess, of that event. And it was fun to reminisce again how it all happened. I got a call from Bryce Jordan, who was then the president of Penn State, and he said that they were doing some long-range planning in regard to intercollegiate athletics, that they realized that Joe Paterno, he said, at that time wasn't going to be around forever. Well, turned out, of course, that he was around almost forever. But this was back in the mid-80s. Said he wasn't going to be around forever. They needed to plan for a post-Paterno era. They thought they needed to be part of a conference. What did I think about them joining the Big Ten? And I said, well, from my perspective, that sounds like a good idea, but I don't know what my colleagues will say. But I told him we'd be meeting in a week or so and that I would ask them. And, of course, I did raise the question with them, and their reaction was pretty much the same as mine, and that is, you know, Penn State was very similar in many respects to Illinois and Ohio State and Michigan State and Minnesota and so forth. So it sounded like a great idea. And so there was virtual unanimous agreement that that was the course we ought to follow, that we ought to pursue that option. And we agreed that we would not make any public announcement for 1 week until we'd had a chance to go back home and talk to our people. And, of course, that was on a Sunday that we concluded that business. And by Monday, I had a call from Sports Illustrated, and they'd already gotten the news, and it was splattering out.
You didn't keep it a secret from anybody.
Yeah, we kept it a secret for maybe 30 minutes.
And since then, a lot of things had happened at Penn State, some of them not so good.
Some of them tragic, yes.
Yeah, very, yeah. very. You were there while the Paterno-Sandusky tragedy unfolded, and now they seem to have righted the ship, have they not? Certainly from a sports standpoint, they have. They've got a terrific football team. Their volleyball team is fantastic. How's the university doing? Have they recovered from this yet?
Well, I think the football team is, and the university too, by and large, has recovered. I think among the alumni and particularly at the level of the Board of Trustees, there are still wounds there that have yet to heal. But I think that, you know, time and perspective and understanding and conversation ultimately do heal. And so I'm optimistic about the long term. And they've made, I'd say, their 80% of the way home on that. But it's taken much longer, frankly, than I thought it would for them to recover.
Has the opinion of Joe Paterno changed in any way? Has it changed? Is it more positive than it was during that time?
I think Joe is more...
They took a statue down and all
yes,
that?
Yes, they took a statue down. I think a very difficult decision, but I think the right decision, given the circumstances. But that, the symbolism of the statue, I think, is still a sticking point with some of Paterno's admirers. You know, in all lines of life, but particularly with athletics, we like to endow sainthood on our heroes in a way that human beings, regardless of their line of work, don't deserve. You know, we know from our biblical teaching that all of us, none of us is without sin or blemish. Sure. And
yet we continue to do that, don't we? We put them on a pedestal.
Yes, and I knew Joe well when I was there earlier and followed him later. Joe was a terrific guy, and when I came here, the first question I was asked by the Chicago Tribune was I going to bring Joe Paterno with me?
Well, he was such a darling of the
yeah.
media for, I remember the Big Ten meetings. People couldn't wait to get those other coaches off the podium to get Joe up there.
Exactly. So, the fatal mistake was believing that Joe was a saint. And Joe was not a saint. Joe had human frailties like all of the rest of us. And he himself, at the end of his life, in respect to this incident, said he wished he'd done better, wished he'd done more. And I think that was an honest expression of reflection, honest reflection by Joe on the events. But... University is, to go back to your original question, university is now recovering, and the football team is fine, and the athletics, the academic side of the university has been strong throughout. And the board is, I think, now stronger than it's been sometime. Fortunately, they've got great leadership in Eric Barron, the president there now, and I think he's been a rock through all of this.
How have the alumni responded with their checkbooks?
Amazingly well. You know, I think they just concluded, I believe, a $2.3 billion campaign. And so in that respect, they're doing very well. And in spite of all of the pressures. The university, I think, is still in solid mm-hmm. financial position. So there are a lot of bright spots.
Well, after we take this quick commercial break, we'll just segue into fundraising and the lack of money coming from the states and most places to universities and the big launch that the University of Illinois is planning. I assume that's one of the reasons you're here, just to kind of hang out. And
absolutely. I want to do everything I can to make sure that the future is just as bright as the past, if not more so.
We'll take a quick break. Come right back. If you have any questions for Stan Eikenberry, you can call us at 356-9397 after this. We're back with Stan Eikenberry. We're talking about a lot of things and his history with the University of Illinois, and now he has come back to be a part of the big launch that we're having. We're going to try to raise a little money as well. Before we get into that kind of thing, I want to talk a little bit about the presentation that you and Lex Tate are going to be involved in. It's going to be 3 to 5 at the Granger Library at the U of I. This is kind of like Lex's book. It's about men and about buildings, and it's about the building of the U of I from the ground up, basically. So what part will you play? I assume Lex will talk about, she told me that she had to pick 10 men that were more instrumental and others, including Stan Eikenberry. And she'd be talking about that a little bit. But what are your thoughts about this? Have you seen her book?
I have seen it. And An Illini Place. It's just a fantastic book. I enjoyed it. Judy spent hours with the book, going through it from cover to cover, and likes it as well. And she's a tough critic. So mm-hmm. it's a great book. I think, actually, one can write a history of a university from many different perspectives, but looking at it from a physical standpoint, how the campus came to be over a period now of 150 years and why things are the way they are and so forth, it's a fascinating, it's a beautiful book, too, the fantastic photography and some of it going back 50, 100 years or more, but it's been a great project. Been several years coming into being.
I think eight.
Yeah, eight. I didn't know the precise number, but it's been a while. But it's out now, and the timing couldn't be better. And it's a great book.
Sesquicentennial and the launch and all that.
Yeah. So we are going to have a conversation. I'll be the. I play the bit part. Lex will be the main presenter, but I'll tell a few war stories from the period for buildings in mm-hmm. which I was personally involved. But I think it's a great book, and I enjoyed being a part of it.
Speaking of buildings and being involved, you've got your name on buildings now at the University of Illinois, the Stanley Eikenberry Commons.
Well, I was driving on campus yesterday and went around the commons, and it's a beautiful square, the former home of the beloved six-pack
mm-hmm.
that's now being transformed. And it's not all completed yet, but it's about, I'd say, three-quarters completed, and a beautiful place.
I hate to tell you, but some people still call it the six-pack.
That's all right. I won't be offended by
that. And we call the Assembly Hall the Assembly Hall.
Yeah,
State Farm Center.
State Farm Center, right. Yeah, yeah. Things change over time.
that book, what was interesting to me, they had architectural plans and drawings of what the campus or what certain buildings would look like, and a great majority of them never came into being in
yes.
that form because they all kept revamping and redoing. But we were kind of joking about the one story that somebody had the idea that the quad. There was so much room there, they should just put a big swimming pool.
And, well, if you look at the quad today from that perspective, it would hold a couple Olympic-sized swimming pools, I guess,
right,
if you wanted to do that. But, you know, happily, some things in great plans actually come to fruition, and equally delightful, some other ideas end up on the cutting room floor.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about the declining of state funding. The University of Illinois for higher education, the University of Illinois, of course, is and the other universities here are suffering that, as they are, as I read and hear about in many places in this country. How do you see the universities coping with this? Is getting private funds the only answer?
Certainly not the only answer. I think it will require many answers, is requiring many answers. Students, of course, are bearing the brunt of this, the students and their families, through higher tuition, and the strategy there is to try to offset that with more financial aid and scholarships set up by alumni and friends and benefactors and so forth are a major strategic answer to the increasing cost of college. But the declining support of states is generally true across the United States. Illinois is unfortunately among the worst case scenarios, but there are it's hard to point to any state in the United States right now where the public support for public higher education has actually kept up with the needs. So higher tuition, the role of alumni giving and support, both for scholarships, for endowment of faculty, professorships and chairs, and for buildings and scholarships and other purposes, all of that is becoming, Jack Corbally, my professor, my predecessor, used to refer to it at Illinois as the icing on the cake. But alumni giving has now become part of the cake itself.
Yeah, it's been turned around.
Baked in, yeah.
Exactly right. Let's go to Dave in Savoy. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, Jim. And, boy, is it nice to hear President Eikenberry again. I've had a long time wondering about something.
Okay.
Did you ever decide to run for public office? I mean, your leadership skills and your ability to solve problems and your vision about things just seems to me to be the perfect person to be something like Governor Eikenberry or some other position. Have you ever thought about running for public office?
You know, to be quite honest about it, I guess two things. One answer to that is no, but other people have asked me about that. But the truthful answer is I had to spend a lot of time in Springfield and in Chicago as well. And for the most part, I enjoyed that. But I never had the slightest desire to make Springfield my residential address. but I do think you make a very good point. I think leadership at every level in our society now, at the national level and at the state level and at the local level, couldn't be more important. So for those who do have the bug and are inclined to serve the people, I encourage them to do so. But I never was smitten with that desire.
Hey, Dave, there was one time, though, where he thought he might do it, and then he turned to Judy, and that was the end of it. I just made that up. That's not true, but I suspect that might be true.
That could have been true.
Well, she would be a big asset, too, of course.
She definitely would.
And still is.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate the call.
It
is 10:30. Brian Barnhart has the news headlines. We're back with Stanley Eikenberry in just a couple of minutes. We're on A Penny for Your Thoughts. I'm Jim Turpin. My guest is Stan Eikenberry. Stanley Eikenberry was the president of the University of Illinois from 79 to 95. Came back in 2009 to help out when we had that admission practices controversy. And we're pleased to have him back in town. He's here to make a presentation with Alex Tate. One of the things he's going to be doing while in town, that's on Friday, be 3 to 5 in the Granger Library over at the university, talking about men and buildings and building of the University of Illinois, and here to help out in any way that he can with the big launch coming up. We're looking for money as well. And here's a guy, Stan, that you might remember. It's Bill Black. How you doing, Bill?
Fine, Jim, fine. And certainly good to hear President Eikenberry's voice again.
Good to hear you, Bill.
By golly, Mr. President, when you were in Springfield, it was a privilege and a pleasure to work with you. And you certainly served the university well.
You're kind to say that.
We kind of miss you.
Well, on occasion, on rare occasions, I miss it also. But, you know, what goes on there is important, and I thank you for your service.
Well, I thank you for that. It's very kind of you. And
Well, Bill's having a little problem with his phone there this morning as well. Stan, some people are... More people are talking about this now than I ever remember, is that college is just too expensive. Maybe we just don't need to go to college. We've got a lot of things we can do. We learned a little high tech here and there. We can get a good job and so on. And they say, well, if you're going to be an engineer or an attorney or a doctor or something like that, okay. But if you, in other words, they're thinking more about going into other lines of work that don't require a four-year education.
Yes, that's...
What do you think about that?
Well, I think in many respects, for a lot of kids, it may very well be true. There's more than one way to live a life, and there is more than one route to happiness, including education, but life experience as well. I think on the education front today, what can be said is there are more options today than ever before. There is the traditional four-year baccalaureate degree option in a residential university, but now, of course, there's the option of pursuing a baccalaureate degree online. There's the opportunity to go to a two-year community college. There are badges and certificates and other certifications of training, both technical training and otherwise. So there are more choices out there, more opportunities out there to learn and to grow than ever before. So I think that's on the plus side. On the other hand, for my children and my grandchildren, and for all citizens who want an opportunity to be employed and contribute to our society in a productive way, finding a way to grow and learn is key to that. And if you look at the unemployment rates, if you look at average lifetime learnings, if you look at social markers such as your health and longevity and your prospects in life, education in all its varied forms is positively related to that. So for all young people out there, I would encourage them to do everything they can to learn and grow, whether it's in a four-year college or university like the University of Illinois or in some other venue, because that is the future of our society. Look at agriculture now, for example. 50 years ago, 100 years ago, maybe agriculture wasn't as high technology as it is today, but it is a very high-tech industry, not just in terms of the technology of growing plants and livestock and so forth, but in the technological side of equipment and other products that are used in the ag industry. So, and it's true in every other sector of our society. So now's the time to invest in yourself, I think, and learn and grow and be a part of the new world that's out there.
Do I take it you're optimistic about higher education?
I am optimistic, I can't envision a world where don't have the opportunity to learn and grow. It's very fundamental, I think, to the human spirit and to the survival of mankind, not just economically, but socially and culturally.
Now, you're probably more familiar than a lot of people that don't live here about the problems that we have in this state with regard to money and the lack thereof. And yet there are people running for office now or hoping to be the governor. Several of them are talking about, they use the word free education. That would not cost any student that lived within the state of Illinois. I don't know exactly what all the criteria was for making those kind of promises, but it would be free. Do you ever see that happening? I mean, tuition's a big problem. I understand that, but how could something be free when you don't have any money in the state?
Well, even going back to the beginning of my career when I was at Michigan State, the great president of Michigan State at that time, a man by the name of John Hanna, was talking about the fact that great universities like Illinois and Michigan State and University of Michigan and the rest should move toward free tuition. We know the history of the last 50 years.
It didn't happen, right?
That didn't happen. It's not likely to happen in the future. So I think building realistic plans, the real question is gaining access for every single human being who wants to go to college and should go to college to make sure that's financially possible. So that means a good, strong financial aid system. That means universities that do everything they can to produce high-quality education at an affordable price. Cost control is just as important in hospitals and clinics and other sectors of our society as it is in universities. So I think being cost-conscious, but making sure as a matter of public policy that everybody gains access. It's easy, I think, for people to promise things that ultimately are not achievable. We've got lots of needs in our society, but ultimately, American society is a rich, fortunate place, but we have to make sure that our priorities are where they should be and that we're realistic in our demands. And I think it's not at all bad for sons and daughters to contribute to their education, because they're going to be receiving benefits of lifetime earnings as a result of that.
Well, I'll take a quick break here, coming right back with Stan Eikenberry. If you have any questions or anything for comments for Stan, 356-9397 is our number. We'll be back in just a moment. We're back with Stan Eikenberry, former president of the University of Illinois, talking during the break there about the basketball scandal. The feds have come in, the FBI, and have arrested 10 people. And many, Stan, think this is just the beginning, because people, when they get arrested and are threatened with going off to prison someplace, often have the ability to name other names, name other schools, and those kinds of things in order to reduce their own penalties. And I'm afraid that's exactly what's going to happen. This thing may spread, and unlike NCAA investigations, we're talking about prison here.
Yes, and we're talking about not a group of NCAA investigators. We're talking about FBI agents and so forth. Yeah, I'm very concerned about it as well. I think that it tells us again that there are many great things about intercollegiate athletics, but that, you know, the price to be paid is, you know, I think building a program of high integrity and so forth is tougher today probably than it's ever been. So it'll be interesting to see how this whole mess unfolds.
The NCAA seems to have, if they ever had control, seems to have lost more and more control over college athletics, and it makes you kind of wonder, shouldn't there be some other governing body or some other way to work this?
I think the NCAA does come off very badly in this. Emmert and others at the NCAA have to be asked, where were they when all of this was unfolding, and why did it take the FBI to uncover something that ought to have been uncovered by universities themselves? The problems associated with shoe contracts, I think, have been pretty well known for a long period of time, although the precise nature of sending bribes to players and families and so forth was not known. But where was the NCAA? I think the NCAA has become, has not presented itself well in dealing with a lot of these problems for a long, long time. And yet, I don't see any other clear alternative. I certainly don't want a federal agency regulating.
We're the government. We're here to help you.
I don't see that. I do think that self-regulation by colleges and universities, both academically and athletically, is absolutely fundamental in our society. But when there is evidence of being asleep at the switch, I think that raises real questions about the need for reform. And I hope that there will be whatever, you know, steps need to be taken for leadership reform, policy reform, organizational structural reform. The NCAA needs to equip itself to perform much better in a much more challenging era.
They certainly have a lot of money involved in these things. The NCAA has income, and it makes you wonder what they're doing with all that money.
Yeah. Well, there's too much money.
Television contracts are unbelievable.
Yes, and like it or not, at least it would be my view that coaches' salaries are out of line from where they should be. And ultimately, this doesn't serve fans as well. Students, alumni, the public in general is not well served by all of this, as ticket prices and questions of integrity and so forth. None of this is helpful, I think, to the long-term future of intercollegiate athletics.
You know, one of the most enjoyable times that I've had since I've been in this seat and working with this radio station was back when you were the president and John Cribbett was the chancellor. And the two of you would be at a lot of the sports banquets and speak there and have a very active role. But what was it like working with John Cribbett? He appeared to me to be one of the smartest guys that I've ever been around.
he was scary smart, you know. He was a kind, tough, intelligent, high integrity partner. I was so lucky to come here in 79, still a relatively young kid, 44 years old. I had never set foot on the University of Illinois campus until I was parachuted in, if you will, as president. And John had been appointed acting chancellor at that time. His predecessor, Bill Gerberding, had gone to be president of the University of Washington, and John had been drafted as the dean of the College of Law to come over and serve as chancellor. I was so fortunate to come into the presidency of the University of Illinois with John in that role and finally persuaded. He wasn't at all eager to continue in that role for another 5 years, but happily he did. And I can't remember a more rewarding, pleasurable time in my own experience than working with John Cribbett.
He was a terrific, terrific guy, so much fun to be around, and a guy that you could, if he said something, you could take it home. It was,
you could, yeah.
He never backed away from what he told you, because he always told you the truth in the first place. We only have about a couple of minutes left, but I wanted to talk to you briefly. Are you a social media guy? You are really good with the gadgets and all that stuff? I know you have a
cell
phone.
Well, I have an iPhone.
You just are,
yeah,
you
I have
just...
an iPhone. I have a cell phone that I remembered to turn off while I was here. And I spend probably more time in front of my computer, but I'm not afflicted with tweeting.
Thank goodness.
And I wish, frankly, that some others would back off a little bit on tweeting. And even, you know, I have my kids and grandkids and so forth are fans of Facebook, and some of my friends spend a lot of time on Facebook. I don't go to Facebook unless I have a specific reason to be there.
Unless somebody's put your picture in there.
Exactly. But, yeah, I think it's a wonderful world in which we live. And when I came back to the University of Illinois in 2009 and 10 to pick up the presidency for a brief period, the one big change I found between earlier days and then was the change in technology and the fact that, you know, I would go into the office in the morning and I would have just a flood of communication, maybe 400 or 500 emails that accumulated over the night before, particularly if there was a snowstorm or an accident or something that somebody didn't like. Boom.
Problem, you know, of some, yeah, sort, yeah.
And I think the positive aspects of all of this have been great, but I think we need to worry about the ability of people to communicate effectively, say things to each other that may be difficult to say, but can be said face-to-face in a way where communication can occur and a meeting of the minds can take place rather than in the brutal aspects of electronic communication where it becomes faceless and where words tend to push people apart rather than bring people together. So I think making sure that young people spend enough time actually interacting with others face-to-face, because that's what life as we know it is all about, is human interaction, not necessarily interacting with a machine.
Well, Stan, this has been a terrific hour. Our time is up. In fact, we're going to join CBS News in Progress here in just a moment. But it's been one of the most pleasurable times I've had on this show for a real long time. It's
well,
so good
you,
to
Jim.
See
it's
you.
It's great to see you, too.
I remember Lauren Tate and I used to go to your office every once in a while when we were doing our Saturday show and harangue you about, come on, you want to be on the air. And you never really wanted to, and then when you got there, we just had the best time. You found out you liked it.
Well, you were short for material, too, obviously.
That's right. It was a slow news day.
Slow news day.
Stan Eikenberry has been my guest. He is was the president of the University of Illinois from 79 to 95, came back again in 2009, became the head of the American Council of Education. In town, taking part in some of the festivities here. We'll be with Lex Tate again, let me remind you, on Friday, 3 to 5 at the Granger Library at the U of I. This is WDWS in Champaign-Urbana. We join CBS News in progress.